Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good.
Today we have myself, Ange. Oh, wait, am I breaking continuity?
Yes. Yes, you are, Chris.
Is that what we're talking about today?
Oh.
My bad.
This episode is brought to you by awesome Patreon backers like the bountiful Bob Queck, the darling Doug Ross, and the generous GM Gerrymander.
Welcome to the Gnomecast. Oh, did I do it again? My bad.
You did. You're like a broken record, or something like that. Anyway, today we have myself, Ange, along with Chris, who you've heard, and Phil, and we're going to talk about how worried you should be about maintaining continuity in your campaigns. How meticulous do you really need to be?
As much as you want. That's the quick answer. You can go home now.
It is the quick answer. No, they can't go home, Chris.
Talks amongst yourselves. Come up with an agreement.
Before we dive into our main topic, though, we're going to ask our Get to Know a Gnome question. What was a time you had a plan for a campaign you were running, but ended up having to scrap it or change it dramatically because of the player's actions?
Phil, do you go first? Do I go first? How does this work? It's been a while.
Yeah.
I'm going to let Phil go first.
I had to think very carefully because I definitely had answers for this, but I needed to do it in a way that wasn't going to take up like the whole episode telling a game story. So I think I can boil this down. Back in the early 2000s, I had a D20 modern game that was that we just called Heist, and it was like Pattern on Ocean's 11. And it was just about a crew in Las Vegas doing various heists. And at one point, I did what I now would call a sneezack, where I just started experimenting on the players by just like randomly inserting plots and questions. But I just wanted to, like, as a social experiment, I decided to threaten the stability of their secret identity of like being, you know, thieves without anyone knowing or anything else. And I went to lean on them and blackmail them with a larger criminal syndicate who like caught on to them. Anyway, what had started as a delightful Ocean's 11 style game of stealing random stuff all around Las Vegas devolved into Reservoir Dogs as the players decided to like hunt down every person that was part of this syndicate and murder them. So the game took a very dramatic turn. They stopped pulling jobs and they started just like hunting down people. And literally the campaign ended when they gunned the last one down on a beach in the Cayman Islands.
That's a tonal shift.
Yeah, it was a moment where I was like, huh, I really didn't expect it to go that way. Like, I just thought I was going to kind of mess with them a little, but they took a very dark turn and we finished out the campaign, but it ended not in the way that it started.
So for me, this is a little bit of an embarrassing story, which I have told before on the stew in various places, but I was running a superheroes campaign, was very much meant to be slightly modeled on the TV show Heroes, where it's the normal world we all know and live in, but people start having superpowers appear. And I set this up by saying that 6 months prior to all the PCs developing their superpowers, they'd all have a flu that had gone through the country. This took a different meaning in 2020 when we had the pandemic, but like there was a pandemic and a lot of young, healthy people experienced a pretty severe case of the flu. And those that survived were the ones that developed superpowers. And it was meant to be a fairly lighthearted campaign as they become superheroes and figure out what's going on with the world and so on and so forth. We had several sessions. Players had a lot of fun. I was kind of winging it. I was barely hanging on to the control of the campaign to begin with. But then my players started talking, and my players are much smarter than I am. And they started talking about the epidemiology of the flu that gave them all their powers and started extrapolating how many people would be developing powers throughout our country and in the world beyond. And suddenly they were talking about how they needed to start prepping for the end of civilization as governments were going to collapse under the advent of people with superpowers and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, rather than being able to regain control and give them that game that they were interpreting, I panicked and I canceled the campaign. But it was definitely, the campaign had kind of an arc I was aiming for, and then the players' actions, decisions, discussions completely derailed me, and the whole thing crashed.
Sounds rough.
Yeah, that's...
Honestly, that was the changing point of me and my GMing skills, because I was like, I can't keep flaking on campaigns. So after that, I started trying to go in a little more purposeful, a little more control, working on the things that I knew I was struggling with.
Hey, man, lessons learned.
Yeah, lessons learned.
My first story is about lessons learned. So I'm running this game called the Airy Peaks that people have probably heard about if they've been listening for like a decade. And I put forth an option that I didn't intend to be taken, and everyone took it anyway. I told a character they could go do a thing, and I figured that would just take that character out of the game, and they would make a new character, and then everyone's like, well, I'll go with you. I'm like, well, I made a mistake. And then, of course, in the moment, I let them do it because, you know, I like player free will. And I should have just stopped and edited and be like, look, man, we don't have to go do this. Like, there should have been other options for that. And then Phil was there, so he knows what I'm talking about.
It was a tragic case of these characters are way more bonded to each other than you think they are. Like, when the one player was like, I have to go and, like, help my family. And the rest of us are like, we are going with you. And Chris is like, wait, what?
And that was a good lesson for me to be like, well, we could just stop and talk about it. And that's what I would have done today. I would have just stopped and talked about it. Like, are we sure we want to do this? Like, I don't actually have anything intended for this. Like, we can just edit the fact that that happened, do something different, anything really. Just maybe not leave the campaign premise. But we left the campaign premise.
It ended the first leg of that campaign.
It did. Really the second leg of that campaign. But yes, I take your meaning.
Yeah, like there was a break and then we came back and we were like, cool, let's not talk about what happened.
We did.
In that
we
other.
We had like a,
I think we just said it happened, right? And we just went back to the
like
Airy Peaks.
We had like an hour chat about like of like scenes and things like that that had, yeah. that resolved that situation. And then like you were back
to get
at
us
Airy
out
Peaks.
Of it as fast as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that delicate dance of giving your players the freedom to do what they want to do in the game, but also trying to maintain the integrity and scope of the game you're running.
I got a second one, though, that I think is also pertinent to this question that I think is worth bringing up. So I'm running this AP called The Heroes of Havel's Way, and I set up all this stuff in the campaign that was about arcane magic with warlocks, wizards, sorcerers, even like a thief or a fighter magic subclass, and I got a freaking druid and a paladin. So I had to like pivot, not like the campaign, like what was happening in the background, like the what's going on document, but all the like other stuff that I had already prepared. I'm like, well, I got to figure out how druids and paladins matter to this setting more than I did before, because I'm a big fan of the characters are just as important to what's going on in a story as the setting and whatnot. So I very much tie my characters into what's going on in the story as hard as I can.
Yeah. I think that was a situation of you warned us that any arcane magic was going to be handled a little specially. And I had already decided I didn't want to play a sorcerer because I already have one in another campaign. And you know, like, well, what haven't I played in a while? I'll play a druid. That will avoid the arcane, you know, the arcane weirdness Chris was talking about.
It's okay. All the arcane weirdness is still there. It's just, you know, I had to focus more on the gods and the druids of the setting, which was fine.
Yeah, and I think that's worked well.
I think so too.
So let's move on into our main topic. The other day, I was running a Savage Worlds East Texas University game, and I described the monster they had just defeated as being pulled into a small wormhole as it died, as if the creature it had sold its soul to was pulling it back to it. One of my players goes, oh, we've seen that before. And inside, I was quietly going, what? Because I don't remember ever describing something dying like that before. So this got me thinking, how concerned should we be with continuity in our games? And because of that, I figured I'd pull in some fellow gnomes together and we'd chat about it. Now, since we have Definition Panda himself here with us,
oh boy,
let's define what we mean by continuity. Phil, would you take it away?
Sure. Continuity. As defined by the Google Dictionary, the unbroken, consistent existence or operation of something over a period of time, or the maintenance of continuous action and self-consistent detail in the various scenes of a movie or broadcast. And I think that definition is probably more germane to role-playing games, right? It's one of those cases where role-playing games kind of mimic other media. Mm-hmm. Not as much, you know, not always the same, but close enough. So let's go with that one. Self-consistent detail.
If you want to sub out the maintenance and continuous action of self-consistent detail in the various scenes of a role-playing game, it works pretty okay.
Exactly, right? I think that definition will hold water for us for tonight.
I think it generally is applicable to anything that is a form of storytelling, and role-playing games are a form of collaborative storytelling.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
No argument here.
So how important is continuity to you for your games? Chris, I'll start with you on this one.
It's as important as the people around the table can remember, including the game master. Really, let me change that one step further to, because that was four people actually playing in their home games. But if you want the general, like, broader version, it's important as the people that are the audience of the game can remember. It's probably the better definition if you're going to expand that to actual plays and things like that.
We'll get to actual plays. We're going to talk about them shortly.
I don't know. That's the answer.
Phil, what about you? How important is it to you?
So me personally, actually, continuity is pretty important. How touchy I am about enforcing it or correcting it is less so, right? Like, mistakes happen. Sometimes we have to go back and quick retcon things or clean up a somebody's recollection of something happened. I'm actually okay with all those, right? Like, I don't fuss too much about that. But the need for continuity for me is kind of a big deal. Just because it's like a personal feeling about it. Like, I like things to be consistent, right? That's part of my own neurospiciness. But I also think it's like a hallmark. I think it's actually one of the key features of having a campaign, right? Like, the idea of having a campaign is that you have continuity across various stories, sessions, things like that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, like, what's the point of a campaign? It would be like if you were just playing a board game multiple times in a row, and whatever happened in, last week's board game didn't affect this week's, right? That's why legacy games, I think, are really were really exciting when they came out, was they introduced continuity to board games.
Yeah.
Right. But role players were like, oh, cool, you made a board game that's kind of like a role-playing game, right? Like, for us, we've always had continuity.
Or at least we've always aimed for
it. Yeah, well, I think we aim for everything in role-playing games, right? But, so I think continuity is important, and I think the kind of the nuance to that question is, like, how important is it enforcing it and correcting it, right? Like, does it have to be perfect in the moment every time, or can we be like, ooh, I think we slipped continuity, let's quick clean that up?
So let's talk about different types of continuity. I think this is kind of an interesting topic to explore then, because if you're playing a series of self-contained scenarios, which is not like the normal way that we play role-playing games, but it exists, sure, especially if you take a game like, and we didn't play it this way, but you could, Swords Without Master, which is in some ways a Conan or a Fawford and the Gray Mouser type simulator of storytelling, those stories don't happen in time continuity, but they happen in character continuity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those are different aspects of continuity that you can consider. And there are probably more that I just haven't thought about, because I just thought about this while we were talking about it. So you have to decide what continuity is the most important to your game.
Yeah, continuity is something I obsess over as a GM. If I am running a pre-written module or adventure series that somebody else has written, I am constantly second-guessing myself, trying to make sure that I have all of the continuity in place, which, in the end, it's my game. I can do what I want. But the last thing I want to do is throw something at my players and then find out a couple of chapters later in the adventure that, oh no, that thing I just hand-waved away was actually really important. And with my own personal games that I'm just creating from scratch, on the fly or with whatever materials I'm pulling together, those I also obsess over continuity, because I personally have, I've never been diagnosed as neurospicy, but I definitely have certain obsessive things that I focus on. And one of those is making sure that the continuity lines up, that things hold together, that I have that NPC's name from six sessions ago that they're going to see again in the next session. And my players don't remember. My players don't care. And if they do, they'll tell me. But I still tend to over-obsess about the continuity in my games.
You know, I used to, and then I stopped once I started editing actual plays and I realized how bad we are at it. Like, we're really bad at remembering stuff as role-playing gamers for the most part, and most people won't realize it because they think they're right. And that, man, that is a thing about the human condition, man. We think that we are right with our continuity so often when we are not. Like, that is just a thing that happens.
I'm reading this book called Nexus, which is like a history of information systems. And one of the things it talks about is the human mind's ability to just believe false stories.
Yeah.
Right. We, even when we strive for truth, our ability to hold the wrong idea, as long as we've thought about it enough times, we're good. Like,
yeah,
we can, which is why we can collectively forget something in a game that breaks continuity and just be okay with it, because we'll all hold it up, that shared space together.
It's why, mm-hmm, if you asked me this question 8 years ago, I would have a very different answer than I do today, because of just experience with this concept. I'm like, oh, this is not nearly as important to us as I thought it was. Like, it is important to us on a mental level, but in reality, it's not as, we think it's more important than we think it is that what I'm trying to get at, which Phil just illuminated for me scientifically.
I think that the thing for me with continuity is, like, it'll depend. So one, it depends on the game, right? If a game has to keep reaching back to past sessions, then continuity becomes more important because you need the information from those past sessions to be consistent. Like, when I was running a couple of years ago, I was running Knights Black Agents and did a whole conspiracy. Stuff that happened in the first session had impacts on, like, the last session. And so there had to be a pretty decent continuity, not perfect by any means, but a pretty decent continuity through, mm-hmm, the story. But if I'm doing, like, a superhero game where we're, you know, fighting bad guy of the week every story, mm-hmm, continuity could be much looser, because what happens in the previous issue, maybe it impacts a future issue. Maybe it impacts the next issue, but maybe it doesn't impact five issues from now, right? And so continuity can kind of relax a little. Like, I think story also informs, like, how much continuity you might need.
Yeah, I think that goes back to what Chris was saying, because I was thinking about it, the East Texas University campaign I'm running. I'm trying to run it in a much more episodic fashion where it doesn't matter who I have at the table when I'm running. We can just pick up and run with some, you know, Scooby-Doo, Buffy, the Vampire Slayer college story for them to, you know, get involved with. Whereas other campaigns I'm running, I am much more concerned about the ongoing, you know, arc of the story throughout the whole game. And speaking of Knights Black Agents, I have run into problems where the continuity was something I was trying to desperately maintain and enforce because of the whole conspiracy that the players are supposed to be uncovering. But the group I was running for, we were only playing about once a month, and it was too far between sessions for them to remember the details about the conspiracy, and it just reached the point where that started negatively impacting the game. So we kind of finished a storyline and ended that campaign and went on to play something else.
There's another thing to bring up when we were talking about continuity, right? Some things are more important to be to have, like, a solid continuity for than others, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you forget a name, or you shift a name in a game, and even you realize a little bit later, not a big deal. You forget the events of something that was, like, a minor red herring, nobody cares. You mess up the events of a pivotal moment in your game, and that nobody remembers that's how it happened, and that's really important to what goes forward. That's actually, like, going to mess up your story. Like, the shared narrative, that you all have together will be destroyed in some ways, and then you have to fix that. Like, that is a much more break than the other things that I'm talking about.
So let's talk about, how do you handle players forgetting the details between sessions? You know, how do you handle this particularly when you know perhaps the continuity is more important for what you're trying to do than what the players may remember?
I actually will, if it's super important, right? I will just do sometimes, like, what TV shows do, where they just suddenly, like, you know, a TV show that doesn't normally have, like, a recap at the beginning of the episode suddenly has a recap about, you know, some distant episode or fact. And it's like, hint, guys, here's the thing we all need to remember for tonight's game. Like, it's okay, right? Like, it works on TV. You know, you can do it in your game. Other times I will, like, just pause and remind people, like, oh, I don't know if you guys remember, but that person's related to, you know, the shop owner in, you know, in story one.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. I think that sometimes as GMs, we worry too much. I don't think I do, and I know Chris doesn't because I play at his table, but I think sometimes, and I'll say this in general, that we as GMs worry too much about the idea of it all going smoothly and, like, seamlessly at the table, where I am much more like, hey, guys, that was an important thing, right? Like, or, you know, yeah, hey, this happened, like, you know, this ties back to story one, and just say it and just let it be, right? Like, I think, you know, we try to do reveals and, like, you know, nobody at the table picks up, like, oh, that guy has the same name as the barkeep in, you know, story two.
Well, I think this goes back to, I think it was one of you guys who talked about not trying to be too clever.
That's all, I always say that.
Yeah, it's definitely a, like, if you try and be too clever in your setting up your games and prepping, it's going to be wasted. You know, you can totally have some ideas and stuff of what's going on, but if you try and get too clever, too deep into something convoluted, it's probably not going to land with your players like you want it to.
That'll shift between group to group too. Like some groups are okay with you being a little bit more clever than others.
Yeah.
Because that's what they want out of the game, right?
Right. But I think it's the...
You just got to adjust for what you got going on around you. I always don't like it when people are like, don't try to be too clever. I'm like, you can try to be as clever as you think is relevant to what is going on at your table. But remember that if you go too much, you'll probably like go over people's heads.
I mean, Listen, I've screwed up all sorts of campaigns and games, too, and it's fine. Like, everybody's still alive. We all still play games together. Like, it'd probably be okay.
My trying to be clever hits are probably about 50-50, which is not really great, right? Great for Major League Baseball, terrible for a passing percentage. Hey, sports reference, right in the middle of a role-playing game podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's also important to note that just because your players don't necessarily remember things as consistently or deeply as you want them to, doesn't mean they're not enjoying your game.
100%.
Most of us are grown-ass adults and have busy lives with a lot going on, and you know, we're only getting together, you know, every other week or once a week if you're really lucky, or once a month, and it can be hard to keep track of all of that story when you get to the table again. So I definitely do what Phil mentioned and sometimes remind the players of things that are important, whether it's giving them the recap at the beginning of the session or when a character or thing shows up again, I can remind them about the importance of that character or thing from the past.
The only thing I would add to everything that you two are saying, because I agree with it, I have it written down in my notes too, you know, remind them of the important stuff, do it up front or in the moment. If you want it to feel more narratively appropriate, remember that the players aren't the characters. And if the characters will remember that thing, just tell them that their character remembers that thing. And then feel free to edit a scene real quick if you need to. Be like, let's just take a step back. Your character would have probably realized that this thing has happened, even you don't remember because it happened a month ago.
That goes back to the respect the competency of the characters.
Yeah. Always remember. It should be like, write it down on your GM screens. Remember the competency of the characters. Unless you're playing an OSR game where the characters are just an avatar for the player, which is a different play style. So
Very different. One of the other things I really recommend is ask your players what they remember.
Yeah.
You know, ask your players to do the recap and you will find out the important things. I remember back in an Eberron campaign I was running, I needed to throw an encounter at them just to do something interesting in the session. So I had assassins attack them in the inn they were staying at. The next time we played, that was all they talked about. Like, who sent them after this? What's the conspiracy here? So I suddenly had to focus a lot more on that than I had really expected, you know, when I was initially planning the session. So how do you two keep track of all the details for your campaigns to help you with your continuity?
So like in a perfect situation, which I have some of these perfect situations in some of my games, I have someone taking notes during the game. I am jotting stuff down on paper while the game is going on, the important things like made up or invented NPCs, places, events, etc. Then I will transfer that stuff to my campaign tracker for public knowledge, and then my GM notes for my personal knowledge. And that way, when we go on to the next game, I can be like, I can go and read the notes that the person took so I know what the characters know. I can go and look at my updated notes from my campaign tracker to see where NPCs and places are at, and then go look at my GM notes to see what plots have moved forward if I haven't looked at my notes in like a week or two. Which happens with my Mass of Narlathotep game all the time. Like, I will not get to it until like the day or the day before the game to like see what the heck's actually going on. Boy, that game is like a cluster, let me tell you. it's a 1,000-page campaign, right? Like, there's no way that it was going to survive contact with the players, what it intended. Anyways, if I have all that stuff, it's great. But man, let me tell you, I got a game that's not like that at all. My Rapscallion game, it's just pirates. Nobody takes notes. I barely take notes. So it's just like, hey, everybody, what happened last time? And then I just go from there.
Yeah, it definitely depends on how important the continuity is for the game. Last summer, I ran a Savage Supers game that was basically the Bat family with the serial numbers filed off where they were searching for their Batman. I had the loosest continuity. I just, as long as they knew the names of the bad guys they were dealing with and following the mystery. It was mostly just an excuse to have superhero fight scenes and eventually fight a demon in hell to rescue their Batman. Conversely, my other Supers, Savage Supers game, Embers Ignited, is much more character-driven, much more story-focused, and I very meticulously come up with a kind of a summary of what happened in the previous session that I can give to the players so that they know. But then again, I also still do the remind them of stuff. But in that one, I'm much more careful about the notes I keep about what happened and what's going on, because the continuity of the story is more important to me in that one.
Yeah. My general approach to it is, much like Chris, I take all my notes by hand during the session, mostly on index cards. I usually just have like a little stack of index cards with me and I just write on the index cards. The thing that I do, all my campaigns live out of OneNote. So I use an app, Microsoft Lens, to scan all of the index cards in at the end of a game and send them to OneNote. So in my notes, I have my session notes, and then in a subpage right underneath it, I have, for every session we played, I have images of all of the index cards with all the notes that I took during the game. So this way, if I'm getting ready to run that, you know, finish up that session or whatever, I can look at, you know, the notes from last week. If I'm prepping a game and I'm like, oh, didn't I have an NPC back in story 4, you know, or didn't the players make an NPC back in story 4? I immediately can jump to the cards, go like right into story 4 and look at like what I, you know, what I did during that session. Oh, yep, there it is right there, and pull that name forward, kind of thing. And then if the players, and Chris and I share several players, if the players are keeping track, like they're taking their own notes, then yeah, absolutely. I'll tap into those too, because if they're going to do some of that work, why shouldn't I also get to
I like that you
them?
Said that we share them. Like here, you can have them this day.
They're custody.
I can have them this day.
Yeah, you have Saturdays. You have like Saturdays and stuff. I have Sundays.
I
yeah.
I usually try and also keep some sort of information database available to the players. Like in Roll20, I share images of the NPCs that they've met, and they just have access to those.
That's a good
in
tool.
Their journal.
I like that tool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send and I have a one-on-one game that we play together, and since it's just the two of us, we use Freeform, which is a whiteboard software on Mac OS. And one of the things we have is we call it the lookbook, which is for every NPC of any kind of significance in the game. There's a picture of them, which is usually just some photo of some actor taken from Google, and a little description. And so this way, mm-hmm. when we're playing, you know, we can be like, oh, you know, you have run into, you know, Damian Minard. Oh, you know, boom, there's his picture. Remember, that one's super convenient. It's really good to kind of help keep continuity by having images, shared images to go with the characters.
Yeah, I think that's very important.
I like that. So like what, Phil, you use OneNote and mm-hmm. you're using Roll20 or Shard or whatever you're using to like...
It depends on the game.
Yeah, I'm a Google Docs person. There's a lot of tools out there. What's another one? Sean P. Kelly uses...
Notion,
yeah, and Notion's another one. Everybody, those are like four big like campaign tracking tools people use.
Notion's pretty fiddly technical. Like you can get really nerdy on it. I will have to say that I'm probably just. I mean, they look a little different. My actual notes are pretty low tech. Like mm-hmm. I just got like text files with a bunch of bullets and.
Dude, man, I got Google Docs, man. That's it.
Yeah, the only thing I like is that OneNote has. Internal structuring, right? So like I have a notebook for campaigns, I have a tab for the specific campaign, and then I can have pages and subpages, because that literally is how my brain operates, right? Like in a hierarchy kind of thing.
In Shard, I can have everything in the book that I have attached to the campaign I'm running. Only the GM can see that. So I can have everything I need in there. I used to like have it in a Word doc outside of Shard and just have the pictures and the encounter maps in there, but now I've started like just making use of the ability in that VTT to just have everything there.
Yeah, man, I will say that Shard is probably a better campaign management tool for a virtual tabletop than Roll20. I've used both of them pretty extensively now. Like I've probably got 100 hours in both those programs, and I mean I have like 1200 hours in Roll20. Roll20 is kind of trash when it comes to campaign management, but it's a great virtual tabletop. I like it a lot.
I did explore for a little while World Anvil, but ended up not using it because it has some copyright issues. If you are not a paid subscriber, anything you put on World Anvil is open to the public. I really don't like that.
I did World Anvil for a while, I did a paid one. Like, I found some, I think I hit it when it was on sale or something, got a pretty reasonable price for a year. It was good. I didn't love it in that in order to write anything, you had to kind of go into, if I remember correctly, it was almost like a coded editor, like not a mm-hmm. WYSIWYG editor. And it became prep.
Yeah.
Like, it became its own layer of prep on top of prep. And then I was like, But if you don't mind a little extra work, it's got, you know, you can load up maps and do like the whole Google map zoom in, zoom out thing. And
yeah, it can be a good database for yeah. your players. I ended up switching to something called Kanka.io, which is basically the World Anvil concept, but kind of a little more indie and a little more not quite as polished.
A little more punk.
But it was definitely not as obnoxious with sharing your information with everyone out on the internet.
Interesting. Now I'm looking at this too.
And this all matters because it helps you with your campaign management and yes. your campaign continuity.
Let's talk about actual plays. We've all taken part in actual plays, whether they're one-shots or campaigns. How careful do we need to be with continuity when we've got an audience outside of the players at the table? Chris, I'm going to start with you because you're the one currently running the actual play I'm playing.
So I've done this as a player, I've done this as a game master, and I've done this as an editor for multiple different APs. Man, do I try really hard for continuity. I mean, I've done punch-ins to fix mistakes in names, punch-ins to just fix anything that needs to be fixed. I've done hard edits to remove stuff that messes with the continuity of the campaign. Like, just cut out like 5 minutes of a scene, like, oh, that doesn't work anymore because boy, did we not do this thing later. Ask questions to players to make sure we're on the same page as a player and a game master while we're playing. I mean, I've gone back through the audio after games to make notes, to make sure that I have the right names and edits like from past episodes. And look, man, an audience can say they're fine with a mistake here and there, but if I'm expecting people to provide me money for the thing that I am making, then I want to provide a polished product. And continuity, in my opinion, is part of providing that polished product. So that's how I feel about it.
I think too, like, as players, we may play for a few hours once a week, every other week, once a month, however often we can get together. An audience member listening or watching that actual play may be binging that sucker and going through several sessions worth of play and getting it all at once. They're going to see those continuity errors.
Why it's important.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing to keep in mind with APs, right, is that when an AP is played, part of it is a role-playing game, right? When an AP is published, it's not a role-playing game anymore. It's now another form of media.
Yeah, it's entertainment.
Yeah, it's right. And so its requirements for continuity are different than a role-playing game. Like Chris said, we can just agree that, you know, we changed the name of the shopkeeper, you know, six sessions into a game and never worry about it ever again. But those expectations aren't the same when people consume media. And I think that's tricky. And to Chris's credit, right, it takes a whole lot of work to turn something that, you know, we're kind of comfortable with, little continuity mistakes and stuff like that, and then package it into something consumable where people may not be as tolerant to do that. I remember in Children of the Shroud, there was a continuity thing that I had to, on the fly, because I forgot I said a thing. I said a thing in a session about there being a mole in an organization.
Yeah.
And was just like completely, it was gone. I must have said it in the moment, and I must have said it in a way that it didn't even register to me to be important because I didn't put in any of my notes, like post-session, and went on my way. And then one day the players brought it up in the middle of a recording, and I'm like sitting there like, oh shit, did I say that?
Yeah, it's a problem. I was editing them, right? Like, I'm listening to them, so I heard it. I'm like, well, there's a mole.
Yeah, I'm like, did I say there was a mole? I'm like, I don't even think, like, I didn't even have anything planned for that. I was like, oh, like, damn it. That doesn't even go with all the stuff I need to do to get this game finished.
Yeah, man, I'm not even sure that you said it, but you so heavily imply that there was a mole, like the way that things were working, that there was the only way that it seemed possible was that part of it was an inside job.
I legit could have said it. Like, what do I know? Like, I just, you know... Say shit during games.
I think you didn't disagree with us when we said it at one point in time.
No, because we were recording and I was like, oh shit, like, did I do, like, is that a thing? It's one of those moments.
I have to go back and listen to the tape. I have to listen to the tape. I just go back and listen to the tape.
It's one of those moments where as a GM, I was like, I could stop and like try to correct this. I'm like, or I could just like roll with this and I'll figure out what to do later. And I was like, I'll just figure out what to do with later. Like, I don't want to deal with this now, like kind of thing. And so, yeah.
That kind of pings on the point, you know, we said, ask your players what they remember. Because sometimes players are going to remember little details that are important to them and or their character. And those you don't want to necessarily hand wave. You want to figure out a way to kind of give the players a little bit of meat or a little bit of resolution for that thing that they have decided is important, that they remember.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts, comments, topics on continuity?
It takes a really long time to edit actual plays, especially for the continuity. I just throw that out there.
Yeah, just play one shots for APs. Much easier.
Do not do that. You can do that. Just don't do only that.
No, I think the irony is I'm saying it, right? I'm like the campaign guy. Like
it is pretty funny. Yeah. Shout out to She's a Super Geek.
Yeah.
I miss She's a Super Geek.
I wish we had that show still. It's really good. It was a really good show.
I was thinking about how great my continuity was in the Masks game I ran, but it was basically a 4-hour session we chopped up into 3 episodes, so continuity was fantastic. Anyway, this show is funded by the Gnomes 2 Patreon. You too can Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnomes 2 website to the Gnomes 2 Patreon. We love doing this and our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network. So if you're enjoying us, here's another show to check out.
The Heroes of Havel's Way. Looking for an epic fantasy adventure between two best friends and their raccoon pal? Check out the D&D audio drama actual play, The Heroes of Havel's Way. Join Aramon, the Dreaming Paladin, and Odie, the Starlight Druid, as they travel the barony of Castakin to fight dirt. Join them as they battle the slurg monstrosities of Valhal Morris, the Titan of Earth. What? The raccoon? Oh, his name's Monty. He talks, and he loves baked goods.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, along with GnomeStew on, I mean, other social media. We're not super active there now, but Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, Threads. Gnomes, is there anything else you want to give a shout out to today?
Oh, I mean, you can always find me at Pandas Talking Games. So wherever you find your fine podcasts, including this one, you can also find us there too.
When you hear this, it's Dragon Week on YouTube. Every content creator and their mother is, you know, making YouTube videos about dragons. So, you know, if you're into YouTube and you like listening to fantasy media and you like dragons, there'll be about 8 billion of them. This is put together by Ginny D and Pointy Hat. So if you like Ginny D and Pointy Hat, then go check it out. And they'll have playlists, daily playlists of all the dragon videos that are out on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from April 21st till the 25th.
I like dragons. So for me, I am going to be attending Buckeye Game Fest in Columbus, Ohio over the first weekend in May. It's a predominantly board game convention that is working to introduce more RPGs. So me and my fellow Matinee Adventures GMs were invited to come and run games. If you are attending or in the area, please stop by and say hi. So do you think we have enough continuity to avoid throwing anyone in the stew?
Does it matter? Like, we have clones of ourselves. Oh, shit, I'm not supposed to say that. Yeah, throw me in the stew.
Sure, but that breaks continuity if you show up next time having been thrown in the stew.
But I'm a clone then.
It's gonna ruin continuity if we just tell people we have clones.
That's fair.
Sploosh.